Hey guys, coming up today on Sports Spectrum, this is one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. And I've said that a few times, but I mean that when I talk about the stories that are shared on today's show. Don Yeager is our guest. He is an 11-time New York Times bestselling author. He's a leadership speaker. He's an executive coach. He's a podcast host. He used to work with Sports Illustrated for many, many years as an associate editor there and a writer. And he's done tons of books with some of the biggest names in sports. When you think about people like John Wooden, Bubba Watson, Walter Payton, he's doing one right now that's coming out in about a month or so with Deion Sanders, Coach Prime. And man, does this guy have stories to share. He's also a faithful follower of Jesus. And a lot of what he talks about with the stories that he shares are connected because of faith. It's almost like faith has been an advantage of his, faith in Christ as an advantage of his, to be able to get access to some of these people at the highest platform who also love Jesus, like Scott Drew, like John Wooden, like Coach Prime. I was just listening. That's all I was doing, guys. I asked a few questions, but I listened because Don Yeager is a wonderful storyteller, and I can't wait for you to hear the conversation coming up here on Sports Spectrum. First, I want to tell you about our friends at the Faith and Sports Institute at Baylor's Truitt Seminary. It's a place where Christian leaders in sports are formed and equipped through theological education, practical training, and useful resources. Baylor University, it doesn't get any better than that. And the Faith and Sports Institute is a place to check out. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. As a sports ministry leader, coach, athlete, pastor, or student who wants to learn more, you can apply for admission in an online or residential graduate degree program. You can take continuing education certificate classes, and you can participate in character and leadership practicums. Start your journey today with the Faith and Sports Institute at Baylor's Truitt Seminary at baylor.edu/truitt/FSI. baylor.edu/truitt/FSI. Think deep, lead strong, and run the race well with the Faith and Sports Institute at Baylor University's Truitt Seminary today. Well, it's great when you can have an 11-time New York Times bestselling author. He is Don Yeager. Don, I've been waiting to talk to you, my friend. So glad you could join us here on Sports Spectrum.
Jason, what an honor. Thank you. And I love everything that you all do and stand for. So thank you for allowing me to be a teammate for today.
Yeah, this is going to be a fantastic conversation because I first heard about you and learned about you, if you will, by reading Walter Payton's book that you collaborated with him on. Can't wait to talk about that. But you mentioned what we're all about, and that's certainly the Lord. I want to start there. Let's talk about your faith and tell me about the importance of Christ in your life and maybe how that all kind of came about.
Absolutely. So, I'm the son of a preacher. My dad was a Methodist preacher, born and raised in Hawaii, where he had a church. The Methodist church had him there, and we lived there till I was 11, and then he ended up joining a ministry, a radio ministry that took us to Okinawa, Japan, for a couple of years.
Wow!
So I'm 13 years old, and I had never even stepped foot in the continental United States, and my dad asked for an opportunity with the church to actually move, and we ended up in inner city Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay.
And Hawaii, Japan, inner city Indianapolis, not really a natural track for most, but growing up, faith was just, it was a part of everyday life, right? In some ways, I think you kind of get spoiled in that. I'm sure maybe some of your listeners might appreciate that. You don't actually feel like there's a transitionary moment, right? There's not the glow, the lights,
the come to Jesus moment, if you will, right?
Right. So, yeah. It was just you every day. You're witnessing it. You're seeing it. Seeing it in play at home and in such a wonderful and dramatic way. Now that said, so I first accepted Christ as a teen. I think, in a not I think, but I in a window in which I said, man, this is a commitment I want to make. Then I went away from college and went away to college and did what a lot of kids do, and probably found myself not on the right path. And it was a few years later when I was a little deeper into my early part of my professional career, when I realized that I had stepped away. My mother was a wonderful it was person of wisdom, and was able to just come and sit down with me and say, you know what, I see things in you that aren't quite, and she said it in such a wonderfully and graceful way that I didn't, I felt convicted but not ashamed. And I think that that's a real gift when someone can actually speak into you and not shame you into suddenly realizing that you weren't being who you should be. And so that became part that I became more active and really spent my time digging into my relationship with Christ, and it's played a powerful role in much of my adult life, and it's been a really incredible role in even the work that I get a chance to do these days, writing books. I mean, I've been blessed over the last couple of years to work with Bubba Watson, amazing man of faith. Rick Hendrick, incredible man of faith. And currently, and I know we're going to talk about it, Deion Sanders. People may miss that, but boy, his faith. I mean, I've met a lot of folks who profess faith, and then there are some who are on fire. Deion is on fire, and it's special to be. So the opportunity, one of the things that you would appreciate in our world of journalism is that there aren't a lot of people of faith necessarily, deep faith in journalism. And so it was a, in many ways, it's kind of almost been a differentiator. Scott Drew, when he, we began and ended every interview of our book together with prayer. And, he just knew there were other writers he could not engage that kind of relationship with. And so faith for me, in a wonderful way, became a professional advantage. Which I love to show people, because too often we think of it as being something that holds us back. In fact, it's opened doors for me. The fact that I am that I believe means something to a lot of people. So.
When did you recognize that your faith could be advantageous to building? Because I didn't realize this much either until later in my ESPN career, and ultimately when I left to kind of do this with sports ministry, did I realize, oh, I can begin to have relationships and connections with some of these people because we're like-minded. We both believe in the same thing, and it helps gain, quite frankly, access to be able to talk to some of them on our show because they know I'm going to ask them about their faith in Christ. When did you realize that that could be something that was advantageous for you?
It's interesting. At Sports Illustrated, obviously, everybody knew where my faith was in my role as both a person, a journalist, and what stood out to me. They didn't call on Sunday mornings. There were things that were that happened differently for me than for others because they understood my faith. That said, it also led, there were times when they said, hey, we've got this person that we need to interview. The faith is really important to them. You're our one person that can speak fluent fundamentalists. So we're gonna send you. I actually started drawing some assignments that happened on several occasions at SI, where
Interesting.
they recognized that there was something there that I brought to the table uniquely because of my faith, and because I didn't shy from it. And so it allowed me to stand out in my own little way on different places. But beyond that, it just, as John Wooden, who I had the chance to work with for 12 years, used to say to me all the time, just make sure that if they try you for your faith, that there's enough evidence to convict you, right? You know, you don't have to be out there with a bullhorn. We don't, you don't need 3 steps and a Bible and a sign on a street corner. Just make sure that if they try you for your faith, that there's enough evidence to convict you.
Wow.
And Coach Wooden was a great influence on me as well.
Yeah, I want to talk about Coach Wooden. I want to talk about Walter Payton in just a second. But if I'm talking to the 21-year-old Don Yeager, who's at Ball State, right? You went to Ball State.
Oh, look at you. You've done your research.
Did my research. Yeah. Who am I
I
talking
know,
to
I
at
know.
who am I talking to at that point? Like, who's the 21-year-old Don Yeager? What was the dreams of that guy?
Well, I had I was in student journalism at a really high level, but I, at 19 years old, I became the youngest I was the youngest nominee finalist for a Pulitzer Prize for an article that I had done for the student newspaper, which was crazy. And
Yeah.
again, I'm God is good in that He didn't allow me to win, because I would have been miserable. But I was quite full of myself. I was really sure that I was pretty amazing, and all you had to do was ask me, and I'd tell you. And so, I think I had lost a little. I had found something I was good at, and I had lost any connection to humility. It took a couple of opportunities to be embarrassed by mistakes, to remember and to get myself back. And it was all part and parcel with that window of time in more of my mid-20s when my mother came to sit down and say, "Look, I think there's a part of you that's not the part that I know you would be most proud of later in life." And so yeah, in that early 20s, I was pretty darn full of me.
But were your dreams to kind of do some of the things that you were able to do? Because people ask me that too. When I was in college, I wanted to host my own sports talk show in 1996, right? And I ended up being a producer behind the scenes for many years. And now in my late 40s, I'm just turned 50, I'm hosting my own show, but not in the way at all that I thought God, that I thought would ever happen. So what were the dreams? Like, could you have ever imagined that you would be writing books with people like Deion Sanders and John Wooden and Walter Payton?
Not at all. I wanted to work at newspapers. I wanted to be, frankly, I wanted to be an investigative journalist. That was my, that was my window. That was my time. That was actually the story that led, to many of my recognitions and awards in college. It was what I did in the early part of my career. I wanted to be that investigative guy. I kind of felt like that was my way to make my mark on the world. They would never forget me because I would leave scorched earth behind me when I walked out. And as there's a lot of investigative work that has to be done and needs to be done, and it's an important part of American journalism. And I was committed to it, and in some ways, it became my God. Right, it became I so wanted that next big story, whatever it might be. Hey, we need a reporter to go travel with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Sign me up, coach. I wanted whatever it was that was the next big story, and that's how I was defining me individually, and that was in many ways where I that was that window where I would begin to lose myself.
We're talking to Don Yeager here on Sports Spectrum, 11-time New York Times bestselling author. And I got to ask you, because I know the Payton book was where I was introduced to you by the Walter Payton book. And it was such a profound book. And it was released after he had passed away in his very public battle before he passed away. And he's such an iconic figure in the history of the NFL. And as a kid who grew up watching the NFL since I was 7 years old and loved the NFL today and loved watching football in general, to see him pass was just really sad to see. And then when his book came out, I started reading it. And I wasn't a Christian yet, Don, if I'm being honest, when I read it. But I do remember quite a bit of faith, especially towards the end of his career, being talked about. Want to get to that in a second. But how does that come about? Because I know that was such a game changer for you with opportunities. How does Don Yeager and Walter Payton get put together to begin writing a book?
Well, I had met Walter a number of times earlier. I'd interviewed him, worked with him on different things, and then he got sick. And when he got sick, he happened to be looking. He realized, he was 46, right? If he was going to tell his story, it needed to happen then. At the time, he was sick, but not yet. He didn't yet know he was going to die. And then he went on a journey to try to find a writer to do a book with him. And as it happened, in the middle of all that, he was struggling with the people he was talking to. They weren't connecting as he was hoping. And I was on Oprah Winfrey's show for a story I had done for Sports Illustrated, and he saw me, remembered our interactions, and called and said, "Look, I need to do a book, and I need to do it now. And I saw you on Oprah, and I'm just wondering, would you be interested?" And it's like, "Are you kidding? Like, sign me up, coach, again, right? I flew to Chicago that night. The next morning, he shared with me that he had just learned that he was no longer eligible for an organ, and that the disease he had would ultimately cost him his life. And he wanted to know if I would live there, if I would be part of that of his closing weeks of his life. And I was there for 10 weeks, and had the opportunity to. He was my hero. Right? Like you're like, and we both been there. Most of us are told, don't really get to know your hero because they'll always let you down. Walter was the complete exception to that conversation. Walter Payton was the greatest football player in my mind to ever play the game. And he was a better man than that, which is a really big statement to make. And to be with him and to watch him in these weeks in which, things were, he knew what the end game was going to be, and yet he was trying to squeeze every ounce of life out of those last weeks. And I was honored to be part of that journey with him.
So a couple follow-ups on that. I've known Jarrett a long time, his son, Jarrett Payton. If you're talking, the way you describe Walter is the way I would describe, and I know you know him too, Jarrett Payton. Like it's just a dynamite human being with a smile on his face all the time. And he honors his dad in such a beautiful way and loved his father. When you think about the end, you said the last 10 weeks or so was of his life, you were with him. There was a moment. And just in doing some research and reading some things, I believe I haven't read the book in 20 years, so forgive me on this, but I'm remembering that Walter, I feel like, encountered and had a really interesting experience with God towards the end of his life too, didn't he?
Sure did. He absolutely did. It was one of those things. Walter grew up in the church in, Mississippi, and he would proudly have declared himself a Christian for much of his life. But he had windows, like many people do, where the distance between he and his faith would seem great, and where his actions didn't really comport to that of a person who believed. But as he was fighting in this last period, he really felt like he had several encounters with a being who would remind him that he had this need to say the right words about his faith when asked. And he did in our conversations. And it was interesting because I think had I really approached him 6 months earlier, he might have had different answers. And it's a shame. And he even acknowledged the sadness of the fact that it took him being in that condition to feel or to experience some of that. But a lot of that is, you have to be ready for the spirit when it comes your way. And he hadn't been ready. And so, it was a but he yeah it was a beautiful little piece of the book. It wasn't because the book covered so much of his life, it was only a piece of it. But yes, faith became incredibly important. In fact, he and I prayed on every opportunity that we had to spend time doing an interview, we would begin or end it with prayer.
That's beautiful to hear. Yeah, it reminds me of the thief on the cross in Luke, you know, when he's Jesus is up there on the cross and the thief's right next to him, and he gets welcomed into paradise like minutes before he's about to die. And I always think, you know, sure, you get sad for some people who've known Christ their whole life and are on fire for Jesus their whole life. And then there's people who right before they know their time is up, make that decision and there's no difference. Like it's just a
That's right.
beautiful part of grace and the beautiful part of the gospel.
Our God welcomes all.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
That's right.
When you were writing that book with Walter and then it came out and people started reading it, what did that do for your career? That had to really be an interesting,
Changed everything.
it changed everything, right?
Yeah, I was already at Sports Illustrated at the time. So
Which
you
is a
could
big
argue
deal anyways,
from
right?
it was a big deal at the time,
Yeah, of
but
course.
and it was a so I was established in my career, but not I look, I mean, Sports Illustrated had some talented people, and I would just happen to be on the staff, right? I wouldn't put
Sure.
myself in the echelon of super talent. But when Walter Payton, I've said this a number of times, when Walter Payton wraps his arms around me and says, "I trust you," because that was the ultimate trust, right? You think about writing a book with somebody. Most people you write a book with will read the book before it comes out.
Right. Yes.
Walter Payton knew, he knew, given the circumstances, he would have to trust that I would represent him well. And in fact, that bore fruit in a really unique story I'll share with you real quick.
Please.
One day I was with Walter. And it's probably 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks before the end, and I asked him. I said, "Walter, you're first ballot Hall of Famer, leading rusher in the history of the NFL, Super Bowl champion, name it. There is not an accolade in that profession you don't currently possess. If you could trade all of that for one day in the future, what would the day be?" He did not bat an eye. And he looked at me and he said, "I would give it all to walk my daughter down the aisle."
Wow.
Jared's little sister, Brittany, at the time was 13 years old. And Walter proceeded to tell me what her wedding day would be like, what it would be like for him to get to give his little girl away, right? And what he would say and what it would, he just, and he like, oh, it was all there, right? He had, you could tell this was not something he was making up on the fly. He had already envisioned it. So he passes. I'm writing the book. And there is no way I can let some 13-year-old little girl read in a book that her dad was thinking about her wedding.
Right.
Can't do it. So I never included that in the book. It was amazing content, if you think about it, right? Our job as content providers,
Of course.
boy, how awesome. I could put in the book this amazing story from Walter Payton about what he would say to his 13-year-old daughter. But it would have been completely inappropriate for me as a man to have done that. And Walter trusted me. And so I didn't put it in there. I didn't even tell Brittany about the conversation. I didn't tell Connie, his widow, about the conversation. Didn't tell Jarrett. 14 years later, I get a phone call from Brittany Payton. "Don, I'm getting married and I'd like you to come to the wedding."
Wow.
And I'm like, "Brittany, I got something for you." And I got to go sit down with Brittany Payton and sit down with her and tell her what her father had shared with me that he would say to her on the day she got married. Only happened because he trusted me,
Yeah.
knowing that even though he was answering my question, I would handle it appropriately. And I think I did.
Wow.
Most extraordinary experience just a few weeks ago, actually. I was in Phoenix for a speech. And as it happens, Brittany now lives in Phoenix. And she happens to know the bank that I was speaking for. And so I knew she lived near the country club where I was going to be speaking. I called her, or I texted her, and she said, "Oh, sorry, I'm not in Phoenix. Can't be there. I'd love to see you, blah, blah, blah." Got it. She tells me she's in bail. All good. So I go to do my speech. The CEO of the bank gets up on the dais and he says, "By the way, we brought in somebody special to introduce Don today." And I turn around and walking by me is Brittany Payton. They had arranged for her to come and to tell the room that story about the fact. And so, A, I was crying as I am right now. The room was crying, as you might imagine. And then I had to get up and speak afterward. Like that, how worthless was I? I
That's
just
not
was,
fair, Don. That's not
it
fair.
was totally an unfair moment, but it was spectacular
Wow.
as an opportunity. But what, back to your question, Walter Payton trusted me and it changed my career because others immediately assumed if Walter would trust that guy, I will too. And so you sometimes the gift that people give you of their confidence in you is immeasurable.
That's incredible. I mean, especially I'm a dad to a daughter. I mean, I only have one child and she's 19 right now. She doesn't have a boyfriend. She's not anywhere, at least right at this moment, anywhere near getting married. But I feel like that would be my answer too. Like I just when you started telling that story, I mean, I don't are you do you have a daughter in your
I
life?
do. I have a 14-year-old.
There you go. Right. And so she's that same age. My daughter's 19 and I immediately go to just being a dad of a little girl. Forget legendary Hall of Fame, Walter Payton, and all that. You just immediately relate because you're a dad. Powerful. Well, the trust that Walter Payton showed led you to so many other people. You mentioned a few of them. And one of the guys I really needed to ask you about, and I remember early in my ESPN career, this is 2001 maybe. We used to do a show that I produced called The Legends on ESPN Radio, and Chuck Wilson was the host, and he would interview these legendary people, and we were able to get John Wooden to come on the show. And I remember we were scheduled for an interview, let's say it was 5 o'clock, and the phone rings, and I knew it was probably going to be him or somebody with his, with his team, if you will. And I answered the phone, ESPN Radio, this is Jason. He goes, "Jason, this is John," in his very soft spoken, voice. "This is John Wooden. I think I'm scheduled for an interview with you guys." I said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Wooden, you are. Is now a good time?" Yes. And he was probably, I don't know what he would have been at that time, 90 maybe in
Yeah, near
2001.
90.
Yeah, near 90. And I just sat and listened and produced an episode with Chuck of an interview that he did with John Wooden and thought, this is unbelievable that I'm listening in on this conversation. You didn't just get to listen in, you get to meet him and work with him for many years, as you said earlier. Please tell us a little bit about John Wooden, share stories. I know his faith was vital to him and his life. Maybe just share a little bit of your time with him.
I'll share quickly. So he the I had met him again, working, writing stuff. But then I had heard, this is in the mid 90s, 96 I think, Shaq was in LA playing for the Lakers. And I had heard through his college coach Dale Brown, who's a great friend, actually godfather to both of my children. I love Dale Brown
Love
so
that.
much.
Love that.
But Dale Brown shared with me that Shaq was going out on a monthly basis to spend an afternoon with John Wood. And I was like, what's Shaq and John Wood? Shaq, 26-year-old hip hop, making the worst movies, Kazam, movies like that.
I
I mean, I'll give
remember.
you bad visuals, right?
Yeah.
Kazam. What do Shaq, 26, John Wood, 88 at the time, what do the two of them talk about? And so I wrangled an invitation. And through Shaq, and Shaq's, I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "These are mentoring sessions. Coach is my mentor." And I thought, wow. So I go and I'm thinking it's going to be, we're talking about the game. We're going to talk about, being a big man, passing, whatever. I spend 3 hours. Not a minute of it is about basketball. It's about
Wow.
how to be a better man, how to be a better father, better husband, better teammate, right? It was about, you being better. It was Coach Wooden just coaching him up on Shaq as a person. And so I get up at the end and I'm like, "Coach, I'm just wondering, how does somebody get mentored by somebody like you? Like, how does that happen?" And he looked at me and he said, "You ask."
That's
And
simple.
I said, "Well, how many people ask?" And he said, "Not as many as you might imagine." He said, "Most people don't ask other people if they would pour into their lives because they are just, they're afraid of what the answer might look like, right? And so let's just not ask. Let's assume that the answer is going to be no anyway." So I go away, write a little story about this interaction, this mentoring, and I call Coach afterward, and I'd shared it with him, and I asked him what he thought, and we're all good. And I said, "Coach, something told me as I was standing there that I was supposed to ask." And he looked at me and he said, on the phone, or is he on the phone, he said, "What took you so long?"
Wow.
And from that moment, we began a 12-year relationship. Every other month for 12 years, I flew to California to spend a day with John Wooden.
Oh my gosh.
Recorded hundreds of hours of conversation. I would over prepare for every opportunity to go learn from the master. And he poured into me. I became a dad during that window. He, for the first time, he said, "I really want to meet your son." So, he's just a little kid and 9 months old, and we're flying him across the country so that he could sit in John Wooden's lap. And I remember Coach Wooden had fallen that morning, and it actually hurt his thumb, pulled it all the way backwards. So he was in pain, like it was all bruised. And I'm sitting there, and I look over, and there's my little boy, and he has grabbed Coach Wooden's hand and stuck his thumb in my son's mouth. Like he's sucking on John, he's sucking on greatness, the thumb of greatness, right?
That's right.
But it was, and I'm thinking, oh, that's gotta hurt. And Coach Wooden is like, "Don't stop this. This is awesome." Like, he was
Wow.
amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you write books with him too. He's not just your mentor,
I
but you.
wrote one book.
One
So what
book.
happened is that 10 years in, I never asked him about a book. I always thought that would be inappropriate. I was honoring of the opportunity and the relationship, the learning, the giving that he was giving me. I didn't ever want to pollute it with this idea that I wanted to profit, right? And finally, we're 10 years in, and he's now 90 at the time. Then he would be 98, right? And I'm like, "Coach, why have you never written a book about mentoring? You value it. You give it to people like me. You give it to people like Sh you give mentoring to others. Why would you not write about it?" And he was like, "Why don't we do that?" And so we crafted a book. First half of it are the seven mentors of his life, seven people who shaped who he would become. The back half are seven people whose lives he changed by mentoring them. And it came out on his 99th birthday. And it was the last book written with John Wooden while he was still alive.
Wow, I have not
And
read that book. I need to get it because do you feel
well,
Don too? I mean, I'm 50, and I have such a yearning to want to pour into younger people now. I work with the young adults at my church, and anytime a high school or a college or even somebody that's fresh out of college getting into the world that we both have worked in for many years, if they call me, I am like absolutely. It's always got to be a yes to me because why are they asking me who am I? But if there's anything I can offer, I'm like I want to give it to them. Do you find that at the stage of life that
I
you're in
do.
too?
The one thing I've grown to realize is that sometimes you need to like, and so I saw Coach do this. Like Coach said, he said, "Here are the standards that are going to have to happen in order for us to be in this kind of relationship." He said, "First off, you always come well prepared. Like, don't come in here. Don't come looking for a picture. Don't come looking for an autograph. Like, come with your questions, and I will give you what you ask. I will pour back into you. But don't come looking for." And so, one thing that really stood out to me was the importance of establishing a little bit of a contract. Like, yeah, I'd be glad to pour into you, but I want you to do these things. Right. I want you to read this. I want you to coach challenged me to do certain things. And part of that was just because he wanted to make sure that I was treating this with the honor, and the gift that it really was. Right. And so I do that now. When somebody asks, I'm like, "Hey, you know what? Do me a favor. Read the book I did with John Wooden. And when you're done thinking about that, share with me what you learned about mentoring as a result, and then let's talk about how we might be able to spend a little time together.
Yeah, that's smart.
And, because I want it, I want it to be something that is that's not just transactional. I want it to feel like it's quite that there's depth to it. And Coach challenged me to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you talk a lot of faith with Coach? I would imagine you did, right? His
Yeah, of
deep-rooted faith
course.
is not, I mean, that was on display, right?
Everywhere, everywhere. He I mean, he taught me so much. I one thing that stood out to me was many people know that on the 21st day of every month, John Wooden would sit down to write his wife a love letter. That was the day in which she passed away. And he did so for 25 years, right? Wrote her a love letter every month on that day. One day, I mean, a couple of different days I was there on the day that he was writing his letter, and I had to sit silently while Coach penned this beautiful letter to his wife. Then he would fold it up, put it in an envelope, lick it, set the envelope on her side of the bed, take last month's envelope and put it in a box. And there were boxes, these letters, beautiful letters, which no one ever read. Like, these were John Wooden's letters to his wife. So one day, and I mean, I could almost tell you when exactly it was, but it was October of the year that we were together. And I said, Coach, was there ever anything in these letters that you wished you'd said to your wife while she was alive? And he said, all of it. He said, one of the great mistakes we make is we think we're going to both be around forever. And I didn't say many of these things, and I wished I had. It's what these letters are. They're me getting a chance to say them to her. And I came home that October, and I decided that year for Christmas to give my wife a box with 52 letters in it, one for every Friday, that just had something I loved about her and us and our relationship and our family and our children, something I loved in every envelope. And I discovered, for all the Tiffany jewelry or whatever else I might have given her, that that became her most prized gift, right, with these 52 letters. So the next year I sat down and wrote her 52 more. This year I think the number that I will finish off with will be, right now it's like in the 720 letter range right now.
Wow.
So however many years that's been, 13, I think, years of letters. But yeah, so I'm writing right now the letters to her for next year, so that I will present on Christmas 52 letters again. That'll take us to the 770s, somewhere in there. I think I noticed that as the last envelope when my kids now make the envelopes up, and then so that it's, they get to experience what it's like.
Wow. Don, you're making us, all the husbands that are listening, including myself, you're making us look bad, my friend. I gotta go get a box and some envelopes and some paper right now and start this thing up.
Well, I have, it's funny because I shared this in a small group of our church a couple of years ago. Just some guy, we were talking about stuff, and I shared this, and one of the guys came up after me and he goes, what would you charge me for like 50 of those?
Just
Like, would you write 50 for me? Just tell me like that.
Yeah, a little side gig that you
Yeah,
can
I
do,
could just
John.
write a little side hustle, love letters to your wife. Yeah,
Oh,
right.
that's so
Exactly.
funny. That's so funny. Well, listen, as we wind down, I do want to make sure, because that was fantastic. John Wooden stories, Walter Payton stories. How about Deion Sanders? And that's what,
Oh my
you're
gosh.
finishing up right now. As people will listen to this, the book will be coming out very soon, March 12th of 2024. The book's called Elevate and Dominate: 21 Ways to Win On and Off the Field. I like the number 21. That was Dion's number. I'm sure that's intentional as well. How does the relationship with Dion come together and the idea of this book?
Well, the relationship with Dion, I known him a little bit in the NFL. It was a colleague of his, who knew he was writing a book or going to, he was talking to writers again, and just I got the opportunity to be in the mix. And so when he told me the name of the book was going to be 21, you're going to love this. as a man of faith, you understand. I'm a big fan of John Maxwell. He and I are business partners in some things. So Dion, I said, 21, I get it. That was your jersey number. And he goes, oh, that's only part of it. He goes, the first leadership book I ever read was written by this cat named John Maxwell. Cat named John Maxwell. He said it was 21 ways, 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. He
Course.
said that changed the way that I saw leadership. The book meant so much to me. I reached out to his company, his office, and he came to my crib. He said he came to my, and he said, and he, and it was amazing. I got this opportunity to sit and learn from John Maxwell. And so this book is in part an honor to this guy who changed so much about me. John ultimately is the writing the foreword to the book
Amazing.
that we're writing now. So, yes, 21 is his jersey number, but it also is a tribute to John Maxwell, which
Wow.
is and it's a leadership book. It's Dion speaking to a younger generation to about ways that he would offer the things you need to be thinking of, ways you need to conduct yourself. And faith is throughout the book. Bible verses quoted. He does not run from his faith. I love every bit of it. He's a, as I said, not just a Christian, but a man on fire.
Yeah, I should say we both have been calling him Dion, but he's Coach Prime, of course, as
Coach
well.
Prime. That's
And
right.
he starts off so hot in the 2023 year, and then obviously, I think there's so many lessons in the second half of what this 2023 year was like because everybody was crowning him and putting him up on the pedestal. And I watched him, and maybe we can get into this a little bit, but I watched him in how he would react when his team wasn't winning and they lost some tough games. And it was the same. It was really the same. And I was like, wow. So I'm talking to Don Yeager here, who was probably with Dion during some of this because maybe you started writing the book before, but once that started
Started
out
writing
taking
it a year
place
ago,
a year
actually.
ago,
So
right? So he wasn't even at Colorado yet, when you think
no,
about it.
exactly.
So a lot happened in his life as you're writing this book with him. Did anything change in regards to how this season went this past season and trying to incorporate some of that in the book?
I think there was no question that that team was playing above its, it was punching above its weight,
Of
right? There was,
course. Yeah.
they were not that good when they were 3-0, and they're not as bad as they are at 4-8, right? So the bottom line is, everything, there's a rhythm to things. They were living too high when they were 3-0, and I think they learned a lot of lessons. And I know Dion did. I know, it hurt. I mean, he conducted himself well, or I believe he did, but it hurt, but one thing that did not change was the way he looked at everything as a lesson, right? He says, I coach for an audience of one, and it's not, and we can all appreciate what that audience is,
Of course.
and it's not, it wasn't for the fans or what. He coaches for an audience of one, and he wanted to make sure he was always there. I loved, one line that he shared with me, which was just so wonderfully John Wooden-like, right? Is that I asked him, I said, Coach, when will you know whether this was a successful year or not? Like, what would success look like? And he said, I'll tell you 20 years from now, which is what John Wooden used to say, because he said, 20 years from now, you'll know what the young men that I was tasked with leading have turned out to be. And that's when we'll know whether we were a success. Didn't get any better than that.
No, that is wisdom upon wisdom right there. And a great reminder, I think, in the world that we live in today, where everything, I mean, you saw it, right? When they were 3-0, they were crowned. They were on top of the world, and the second there was a little bit of a bump, the first loss, when I think it was on ESPN, it was maybe against Oregon, if I'm remembering correctly. The
They
second
crushed.
they lost, everybody wanted to rip them apart and throw them down the hill. And I'm thinking, that's that. But what he just told you, or what you just shared with us that he told you, that's wisdom. Like, this is a deeper thing than just winning games and having all the fun one week to another, or trying to be on ESPN and be talked about in a positive way.
And that's what he said. He's like, hey, look, you want to know what success looks like? Success is, I don't have a bunch of guys getting girls pregnant. I don't have a bunch of guys getting in trouble. I don't have a bunch, success is they see what their potential can be and they work toward it. If I am a contributor to that, we are successful.
Don Yeager, this has been fantastic. My last question for you, by the way, I want to mention again the Coach Prime book that you're working on with him, Elevate and Dominate, releases March 12th. So we want to make sure people go get a copy.
Get it now. We want pre-orders, please.
Pre-orders. Yes.
Help
Go to
us.
Amazon and get this thing up there. I'm sure it's going to
I'd love
be
to. I want to
fantastic.
have 12 New York Times bestsellers for sure. Thank you.
That's
Here's,
right.
it's all about me. Come
Of
on, Jay.
course,
Let's get
Don.
this
Yeah.
one.
This
Yeah.
whole conversation's only been about you. Come on now.
That's kind of.
No, that'll be great. I can't wait for it to come out, and I'm certainly going to wish you nothing but the best for that, you and Coach Prime. What's God showing you? This is the last question I'll ask you. What's he teaching you today? Lots of wisdom there, some of the great lessons that you could ever get from a Walter Payton or a John Wooden or a Coach Prime, but what's God showing you right now in the life that you're living?
Well, I think he's showing me the fruit of labor. And there have been a lot of years where you struggle, where you work, or you, and then suddenly, it would appear that you're just having this fantastic year, right? You're writing a book with Deion Sanders, you're this, you're that, your podcast. I'm doing a podcast that does pretty well right now on corporate competitor podcast. I'm writing another book with the CEO of Delta Airlines, Ed Bastian. I speak 65 times a year to companies. All these things would look like, man, it's and but it's the continual plowing of the field, right? It's been out there doing the work that didn't get any attention for many years, to have this moment. And but it's really important for me to remember that the humility that has to stay with me during that moment is going to be important too. So
Yeah.
it's the mixture of it's a reminder that the grind continues, and that I have to keep it in the right perspective.
It's beautifully said. Tell me the podcast again, Corporate Competitor Podcast.
Corporate Competitor Podcast. I interview executives who played sports
Okay.
about being an athlete taught them about leadership.
Oh, I like this. Forgive me for
Yeah,
not
it's
knowing
been
about this, but I'm going to download it right
fun.
now. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been a great run. We've had everybody from Condoleezza Rice to Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America. They've sat down to talk to me about how because there's so much that translates,
Oh, yeah.
and being an athlete for many of these leaders made a big difference in what in the driver of their leadership style today.
It's beautiful. I'm definitely going to recommend that again on the back end, too. He is Don Yeager, soon to be 12-time New York Times bestselling author. You like that? See?
I may clip that one little piece right there, and that may be that's the social media post I'm going to go with right now.
That's
Thanks, Jay.
it. Let's clip it. Let's get it out there, Don. Hey, this was a real treat for me. Wonderful to talk to you. I'm so glad we got to do this, and thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And many thanks to Don Yeager for being our guest today on Sports Spectrum. That was one of the favorite interviews I've ever done at Sports Spectrum. It's been 7 years now almost since the show came out, 2017. And the storytelling. The stories, right? Like those are my favorite things about doing the show is stories. And I like quote unquote interviewing people. That's wonderful. But to actually just ask a question and have that person share story after story after story about people like John Wooden. I mean, imagine John Wooden as your mentor. Don Yeager had that. That's incredible. I want to hear all about that. And working with Walter Payton and writing a book about Walter Payton's life right before Walter Payton leaves this earth and the connection to God that they had and they prayed together. And how about Coach Prime and working right now with Deion Sanders on this new book that's coming out on March 12th? Like, that's awesome. Really, really cool stuff. And that's why I said he has this corporate competitor podcast. I want to go listen because I'm sure there's going to be something I take away from every single episode of that podcast as well. Don Yeager, it was wonderful connecting with him. I'm so glad that he joined us here today on Sports Spectrum. I hope you guys were encouraged by everything that you heard from Don Yeager. You can get that new book with Deion Sanders. Pre-order it now. It is called Elevate and Dominate, 21 Ways to Win on and Off the Field. And again, thanks to Don Yeager for being our guest on Sports Spectrum. You can find us at our website, sportsspectrum.com, for all of our content. And of course, whatever app you're listening to today's show on with Don Yeager, please click that subscribe or that follow button so that you don't miss any more episodes of the Sports Spectrum podcast. If you feel led to on Apple Podcasts, you can leave a review, you can leave a rating, a 5-star rating. All of that helps get the word out about Sports Spectrum. We are the intersection of sports and faith. Maybe you tell someone about today's interview or tell someone about Sports Spectrum. It would mean a ton to us. We love you guys. We thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us next time for another conversation right here on Sports Spectrum. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you soon.